Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
V1. Pull up. Pull up. Pull up. Terrain. Terrain. Pull up. Terrain.
Welcome to the Flight Safety Detectives. Hosts John Golia and Greg Fife, two of the world's most respected aviation safety experts, talk all things related to aviation and aerospace. This podcast and the Flight Safety Detectives YouTube channel are brought to you by the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, PAMA, and Avemco Insurance, a world-class provider of aviation insurance and your one stop for all general aviation insurance needs. Get a customized quote at Avemco.com or give them a call at 888-879-0389. Tell them you're a listener of the show and receive a 5% discount. Now it's time to buckle up because it's wheels up for the latest episode of Flight Safety Detectives.
Well, hello, John. It's January 2022. Not only is it a new year, it's a new show. It is our 100th show, 100 shows that I've had to put up with you. It's amazing that we've made it this long. But we talked about last year revamping the show. We have a cool new opening. We have show segments and an outro, and we're going to be talking about that. But it's good to be back on the air with a Flight Safety Detectives episode and to see my buddy. So how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's quite cold up here. We've had a few days down in the single digits, which means you stay inside. We had 10 inches of snow a few days ago as well.
Yeah.
So we're in the full throngs of winter, and I'm looking forward to escaping. I have plans to escape the end of this week to Florida for a little bit.
Well, good. Yeah, we had some traumatic events out here in Colorado. We had over 100 mile an hour winds, which I got stuck in. And that was quite entertaining. But the real tragedy, of course, was those 100 mile an hour winds blew a wildfire that did a lot of damage here out in Colorado, just in the area where I live and, of course, where my office is. It was devastating because that is a place where I do shop and with my family, we eat and that kind of thing. And it was just, it's just unbelievable what a wildfire can do in a very short period of time. And so we've been trying to support the community with their issues. And of course, the collection and the president was out here last week. So we're going to post some pictures of his little entourage. There were 4 Ospreys along with Marine One and, of course, his motorcade. So we'll post some of those pictures on our website just to show you what I was able to see from the office when he came in, because he did land here at the airport where my office is at Rocky Mountain Metropolitan Airport. So again, it's, you know, our hearts go out to those folks, and know that there are a lot of aviators in that community that were affected, especially up here at the airport. One of the guys that works for the airport, unfortunately, lost his entire home, and he's got 3 young kids. So we're going to be supporting him. But other than that, we have a new format, John. I am so excited about this. We talked about it last year. And so, of course, we've revamped our intro. But now we're going to have some show segments that we're going to sprinkle in. Of course, you know, the prominent part of our show is the dissection of accidents and really bringing the backstories to the viewers and the listeners of our podcast. And so that new segment is going to be called The Backstory, Fact or Fiction. And so when we dissect the accidents, that's where we're really going to be talking about what wasn't covered, what wasn't developed, was the probable cause or a cause really supported by the facts, conditions, and circumstances. So that is going to be the primary segment for our shows, but we're also coming up with some cool new segments. And, you know, based on viewer and listener input, we decided to take it one step further. So we got another show segment called Really? Was It Worth It? And that particular segment's going to involve talking about accidents, dissecting accidents, where you have these people that think they are Captain Courageous, where they do things in airplanes when it's obvious they shouldn't, going beyond their own particular skill level, trying to take an airplane through the mountains in weather conditions that they had no business being in. So those kinds of accidents are going to be dissected in that segment called Really? Was It Worth It? And then, of course, we have
the plays on the ground as well.
Oh, absolutely. These events, John, you know, I know, are going to involve accidents where you and I just shake our head. And so we're going to talk about that. And then, of course, our other segment that we're going to have, So You Think You're Ace of the Base. That one is going to involve some of the accidents and incidents that you and I have talked about lightheartedly, where you have a guy, and I just saw another video of a guy trying to hand prop an SR-22. He's not in the airplane, doesn't have the brakes set. Of course, he's out there, he hand props the airplane, and guess what happens? It starts running all over the ramp and eventually ends up in a hangar. So we're going to be dissecting those kinds of accidents. The guys who are showing off for their girlfriend, unfortunately, it doesn't normally end well when you do that. So that segment's going to be covering accidents like that. And then finally, we're going to have, I think, one of my favorite segments from the Whiskey Tango Foxtrot Files. And these are going to be accidents and incidents and just events that take place where you and I are just going to shake our head. There's probably not going to be a lot of dialogue other than to think, what the hell were they thinking? So I'm looking forward to all of those segments and accidents that are going to fill those segments.
Yeah, you know, we've been picking up a lot of those just because of people we know. But when we start calling them out, I wonder if we're still going to get all those calls that are up because they don't want to hear it.
Exactly. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be not only entertaining, but educational for the listeners and the viewers. And of course, John, based on a lot of our feedback that we've gotten, we tried to tailor the show based on that feedback. And then, of course, as we go forward through this new year and the accidents that we're going to be dissecting, there are some accidents that you and I have talked about that didn't really hit the stage as far as the media coverage. At the time, we didn't have a lot of the social media that we have now, like the accident involving Senator Paul Wellstone, who was a passenger on a 135 operation, flying the charter company was flying an A100 King Air, and the NTSB ended up doing an investigation because there was eight fatal. It involved the senator. But there were a lot of backstories. There's a lot of history and a lot of issues with the flight crew that the NTSB never really incorporated into its probable cause. They came up with a very simplistic probable cause that, of course, was operation based. But I believe that there are more issues and there is more to the story that the board should have developed and actually incorporate it into the probable cause statement. So, of course, we're really going to get into that accident because there's a lot of lessons to be learned there. And then something up your alley, John, is we're going to update on the Boeing 777, the United 777 that had the catastrophic engine failure and, of course, post-event fire back in February of 2021. The FAA and the NTSB are still working on that particular incident, But the bigger thing here is the focus of the investigation. It's really come down to engineering, not so much operations, but engineering. And I think this is where you're really going to shine following this particular event.
Yeah, I've been watching it very closely. Of course, Pratt & Whitney is virtually in my backyard, and I have a lot of friends that work at Pratt & Whitney. So that subject comes up often. So I hear a lot of the banter between employees of Pratt & Whitney and all the mistakes that they see and also the good work that they see in trying to solve the puzzle. So I'm really looking forward to that particular show. That ought to be a good one.
And we're going to be able to dive into more of what the NTSB's engineering department, that is not only their engineering, but of course their metallurgical department, because they're going to have to be looking for the root cause of that particular event. And then of course, how that's going to interact with the FAA and their engineering group to determine the appropriate fix that Pratt & Whitney is going to have to incorporate into that particular airplane, or the engine, of course, because those airplanes are still sitting on the ground to this day.
Yep, and they want to get them back in the air. You know, Pratt's very interested in getting them back in the air, and the airlines are very interested in getting it. There's not a lot of airplanes. It's only 24 of those airplanes and registered. The Japanese had the biggest fleet with that particular engine on it, and I understand that they've just gotten rid of all of those airplanes. Some of them had quite a bit of time on them anyway. So it's a very small pool that they need to address, but it still needs to be addressed. So the issues around the cowling of the engine, which includes the nose of the engine, the nose cowl, is the nose cowl contains within it the containment ring, which is supposed to prevent these people coming out and hitting the airplane. And the second piece of it is the cowling is also supposed to be reasonably airtight, so that when they fire the fire bottles to put out a fire, that it has a chance of lasting long enough to suppress the flames and put them out. And of course, that didn't happen because the cowling was disintegrated. So those two big issues are long-term fixes, and that there's a big struggle with the engineering department. And that one's a three-way because it involves the cowling belongs to the manufacturer. So in this case, Boeing owns the cowling issues. Pratt & Whitney owns the blade issue, but it has to work in conjunction with the containment ring, which is in the cowling, right? And the FAA owns it all.
Yeah.
He's got to make sure it all plays together real nice. So that's going to be a much more difficult problem to address than the current discussion about
cowling. Yep. And that fixed has to be appropriate, because as you and I talked when that event first happened, had they been out over the ocean, we may have had a whole different outcome with that particular event. So we're very fortunate that if it was going to happen, it happened right after takeoff, and the crew was able to get the airplane back on the ground safely.
You know, what's interesting between that airplane and the one in Hawaii, the cargo airplane in Hawaii, is the 777 lost its engine and it kept on going. It was like a Timex watch. It just kept on ticking. But the one in Hawaii lost an engine and he should have been able to come back. So I'm very anxious to see what the power plant group within the NTSB comes up with, why he couldn't get back.
Yeah, that's Transair 810 that you're talking about, 737 that was taken off out of Honolulu. And the crew lost an engine right after takeoff and was unable to get the airplane back to the airport. They ended up having to ditch the airplane. Again, this is one of those events where we were kind of critical of the NTSB for waiting so long to recover the airplane off the bottom of the ocean. They finally have recovered the wreckage. They recovered the cockpit voice recorder. And it is my understanding that they have finally read it out. So we're going to be updating everyone on the outcome of that particular event, see what kind of operational issues there may have been. But of course, the engineering issues and the aircraft performance issues given the fact that that is a transport category airplane that is supposed to be able to fly on one engine. So we're going to be talking about that. So those are just some of the things. We've got an entire list of accidents that we're going to be dissecting. And again, it was based on feedback from our listeners and viewers. So John and I are going to try to accommodate that. We're doing it in a short format, unless we think that more time is warranted, and we'll forewarn you of that. That way you'll be able to plan your listening or viewing experience. One of the other events that we're going to be talking about that recently happened is an accident that occurred several years ago involving a Citation jet with a safety device that was created by a company called Tamrac. We had the folks, we had Jacob on the show, one of the early shows of the Flight Safety Detectives, talking about these active winglets, which is a new technology that they're incorporating not only into business jets, but into business turboprops. They're also talking to the military about putting them on their airplanes. But it's what's called an active winglet. Well, one of the airplanes that was equipped with an active winglet was involved in an accident, single pilot operation. Pilot got into IMC conditions, lost control of the airplane. The NTSB spent a very long time trying to figure out what caused it. Their engineering and aircraft performance groups were very critical in this investigation, and they recently issued a probable cause, basically blaming one of the active winglets and asymmetrical aerodynamic performance. John and I have looked at that accident. The NTSB has recently received a reconsideration of probable cause, which is a typical part of the investigative process that the board conducts. And it was issued by Tamrac, showing that the facts, conditions, and circumstances that the board based its probable cause on are inadequate and improper. And because they've indicted basically this this winglet system as being the cause of a loss of control, when in fact, their own aircraft performance and engineering group, the facts that they've developed don't support that. So we're going to be dissecting this accident. We're going to be dissecting the information that's been provided to the NTSB by Tamrac to talk about whether or not this is truly the appropriate and proper probable cause.
And it's going to be very interesting to watch how this develops. You know, the board and the press never talk very much about reconsiderations, but you can petition the board to reconsider. And boy, I'll tell you, I once asked, as a board member, I asked staff, how many reconsiderations do they have open? How many do they typically go through in a year? An aging report, essentially. On, you know, how long have we had them? How long does it take? And the pushback that I received was very high. And they finally gave me somewhat of an answer months later, but I never got a full accounting. And then for a while, they had one individual who you know, and I know, who worked in there in the office for months just doing reconsiderations, cleaning a bunch of the old ones. So the reconsiderations are done by a different set of eyes than the investigator. So if there was something missing, or if he had didn't understand the segment, like it looks like that, what we have here with the conflict between the engineering department and the accident investigator, then another set of eyes may set that back on the tracks the way it should be.
And when I was with the board, one of my duties when I was in the office of major investigations, I did a reconsideration of probable cause on a DC-8 that was being operated by Airborne Express. The airplane had just come out of heavy maintenance. They were on a maintenance test flight. The airplane crashed. The NTSB, one of my colleagues, was leading that investigation along with the folks that from the engineering and the ops departments and that kind of thing. They investigated the accident and came up with a probable cause. Well, of course, that probable cause was challenged through a reconsideration of probable cause. I was anointed with the duty of following up and verifying and vetting all the facts, conditions, and circumstances. And I found that the investigation did not reveal all of the pertinent facts, conditions, and circumstances and apply them as they should have been in the probable cause statement, the cause and contributing factors. And I ended up petitioning my bosses and the board to take this reconsideration as valid because there were facts presented that were not originally considered by the board in determining the cause of the accident. And the board ended up changing that probable cause statement. So the process does work as long as the investigators who are receiving this petition really delve into it. And again, you got to filter out the bias. You're looking at your colleagues to see if in fact they've actually done their job. And again, here's where emotion comes in. Here's where relationships come in because you're challenging their capabilities or at least the way they've presented this information. And then of course you're challenging the board's findings. And it's going to be real interesting process to see because I've read the reconsideration as you have, John, on this Tamrac. And I'm telling you, there's a lot of information in there that the board failed to consider and develop.
It sure looks like that. We'll have to see how that plays out. But one of the things that I've picked up and the ocean of emails we've gotten from our listeners is how much they appreciate us going through and explaining it step by step. So I've penciled together a format on some of these accidents to take it specialty by specialty. So we have a good size accident and we'll talk about air traffic control, what the air traffic control specialist does. They dispatch usually with the team. You know, so they're on site, they go interview their peers because they are air traffic controllers. They'll go and interview their peers and they'll piece together the role of air traffic control in the accident. So just thinking about all of those, the weather specialists, human factors. Well, I'm trying to find accidents that really pop that out and that, so that we can talk about them. Not necessarily do the entire accident, but do one that is very rich with the subject that we want to talk about.
Yeah. I think that's, with the backstory, people want to understand it a little better because all they see is the front side, the investigators doing their job. And then of course they read the result, but there is a lot that goes into accident investigation and the process of developing all the facts, conditions, and circumstances. And while, we could do a show that lasted 8 hours, John, people don't want to sit and listen for 8 hours. So we're going to try and identify those critical nuts and bolts, bring them to you so that you can understand really the methodology by which each of these individual investigative groups that works on a major investigation or even a small general aviation accident, the methodology to develop those key facts that will support not only a probable cause, but safety recommendations that enhance or improve aviation safety.
Yes. Yes, and that has been missing in a number of accidents lately as I go back looking at them and saying why. I was always frustrated long before I came to the board and even after I was at the board, frustrated with the fact that we oftentimes would run the investigation up, we would uncover problems in the maintenance department, and we take it right to the hangar, and that's where we would leave it, at the hangar door.
Yeah.
It didn't help drive changes in the process of maintenance because we being the board, they never went in and did the same kind of analysis that they do on pilot actions in the operation accidents, where the pilot essentially is the company accident, right? So we never get there in the maintenance arena. Even with big accidents like the American Airlines accident in Chicago where the engine came off, where an engineer actually had the maintenance people doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. Mm-hmm. It was mentioned, but they never get into just the recommendations that would have some meat on it. But what does a mechanic do when his boss is telling him to do something that's not in the manual?
Yeah. That's one. Yeah, and those are really the key factors that we as investigators have to develop and dig up. And sometimes it takes some creativity to get that information because, we get a bunch of feds that go rolling into an operation. It's a very intimidating process. And we may not get all the information that can help improve aviation safety or target those piece in, those people or organizations that are fully responsible so that we can make changes and improve safety.
Yes. Well, we're going to touch on all of that, you know, yep. Mike Sharp and I mean, we really have a lot of people talking to us about the process. I get phone calls on the process. You know, we put our emails out there to send us something on email, but there's just so many people that listen to us that I know that I've crossed paths with over the years. And as old as I am, there's a lot of years, a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. What is that? 2,000-3,000 years old now? So
individual calls. And sometimes interesting. I call and get chided. They take exception to what I've said, which is not unusual. My own family takes exception to what I say.
Yeah. Well, there's some things that you and I have already bantered about where, you know, you and I have both disagreed. So we're going to be airing that as well, because we come from two different perspectives. And that's not a bad thing. It does give the listener and the viewer a different perspective, because, you know, while we do sing Kumbaya quite a bit, there are days when we don't sing Kumbaya. And so, you know, we don't have a problem airing that either. Well, we know that, you know, I'm looking forward to all of our future shows now that we've come up with this this revamp of the show. And I know that the viewers and listeners, I think, will find it more entertaining and definitely educational, because we're going to be getting into a lot more hard hitting type issues and that kind of thing. And then, of course, you know, we're going to be updating on the most recent accidents that have occurred between shows. And again, this is one of those times where we had several fatal accidents since the last time we were on the air with a new show. We had a 2-fatal Baron accident in Missouri. Airplane hit the ground at a very high rate of speed. They were in weather at the time. That's going to be definitely an interesting accident to watch, whether this is an operational issue with the pilot or a mechanical issue, or, you know, a combination of both. We're going to be looking at that. There was another accident, and John, you and I have talked about, and we're going to be really hitting on this. I think this is a key issue this year. It's always been an issue in the past, but, you know, given the fact that we have coronavirus, and we've touched on that, we've had guests on the show that talk about health. There are a number of health-related accidents and incidents that we both investigated. There was just an event that took place out here, almost in my backyard at one of the local regional airports, where a Pilatus pilot was taxiing out. We had a passenger on board. He felt ill as they were taxiing out, getting onto the runway. It ended up in a medical emergency. Fortunately, the pilot hadn't taken off yet. They were able to get the pilot off the airplane. Unfortunately, when they got him to the hospital, he died. We're going to be following up on that to see what kind of medical condition that pilot may have had, as well as his age. One of the things that I've looked at in the past with a lot of general aviation accidents are medical issues, whether that's, you know, because of an older pilot, induced stress, heart attacks, or we have chemical dependencies that have rendered pilots incapacitated or partially incapacitated, where they weren't able to fulfill their duties as a pilot in command. And then, of course, you have those medical emergencies involving passengers that may have some sort of influence on the way the pilot operates the aircraft. I remember an accident out here, and we're going to dissect it, where we had two pilots on a cargo flight. It was a regional cargo flight. They were flying a Metroliner. One of the pilots was eating a sandwich as they were taking off and climbing out to altitude, ended up choking. And because the other pilot was trying to help the pilot that was choking, they lost control of the airplane, and unfortunately, the airplane crashed. We're going to be talking about all of these things, because these are issues going forward that I believe, and I know that you follow suit with me, John, that not only does it affect pilots, but it can also affect mechanics. Because again, you have a medical issue going on, you have some sort of not only psychological issue or physical issue, but it could result in an error in their particular operation.
Yes, without a doubt. You know, working conditions, medical condition, that's all plays a role in everything we do. You know, distractions, right? The cell phone ringing or buzzing in your pocket when you're at the wrong time. You know, Why does it always happen that at a critical point in your thinking, something else happens and disrupts it? And you might have been made a different decision if you didn't have that general term distraction, but whatever it was that caused your attention to divert away for just a second is enough to impact upon the decision that you needed to make. And inevitably they seem to go the wrong way. When you get distracted, it seems like the decision you make is the wrong one. So it's, I'm gonna talk about that. You know, I'd like to put a request out to everybody. We get a lot of emails from you all, and we love it. I go through every one of them. But you know what? You can help us with issues of the accidents. If you know of a plane accident that has an issue that maybe wasn't talked about enough, or even just has an issue, a human factors issue, the medical issues we just talked about, piloting skills issues, give us the accident and give us the issue that you think. Because as I go through these reports, you know, I'm going through them rather quickly. It's very easy for me to miss something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, it's a great point, John. And again, people have an understanding in one direction that we don't see, or they have a misunderstanding. They may believe something occurred, took place, or was a result of, when in fact they didn't really understand all the facts, conditions, and circumstances. So, you know, you and I will try and explain all of that to see what the bottom line, or at least the basis for the conclusions were. And then, of course, there was another recent accident where it involved an older Cessna 172 that took off out of Whiteman Field in California. Pilot had some sort of engine issue, ended up putting the airplane down, but because of the location, wasn't a lot of open space. He ended up putting it down on some railroad tracks. He suffered some significant injuries that were incapacitating to the point where he couldn't extricate himself. Fortunately, there were enough people around, including law enforcement. They were able to drag this pilot, cut his belt, and get him out of the airplane before a speeding train actually struck the aircraft. And there is video on the internet of this particular event. We're going to be following this for the very reason that in a lot of these older aircraft, John, people have not installed shoulder harnesses. And when I saw the pictures of this pilot where he had a lot of damage to his face, the question is, did he have shoulder harnesses in that airplane that could have prevented this? Or if he didn't have shoulder harnesses, that's, of course, what resulted in the damage to his face and possibly led to his incapacitation. You know, should that be mandated? Should older aircraft, where they are applicable, be equipped with shoulder harnesses?
Well, my view on that is definitely they should have harnesses.
Yep.
In fact, so, I find there are certain airplanes if you should, you know, have a full helmet. You know, every time if I happen to go into a military surplus store and you see all those helmets that they're selling, I'm saying, Jesus, why don't we have more pilots using them to protect them, their head?
Because it'll mess up my hair.
That's you.
Now I'm wearing my hat. I wear my hat when I wear my headset. So no, it works out. But I agree with you. I mean, we're always looking for ways to protect. So we're going to be talking about that. Well, I know that we've covered a lot in this particular show, John. I'm excited for future shows, and I look forward to our next show of Flight Safety Detectives. So given the fact that we now have a young lady who has a great voice, who not only introduces you and me, but takes us out of the show, we're going to leave her to end the show for us. But it was great to see you this week. I will see you again next week for another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. And I will leave you with a last word, but you don't have to tell what you used to tell in your last words. We have a new ending.
We still have a lot of stale pilots out there. Please, if you haven't flown in a while, fly with somebody that either knows your airplane or an instructor, just to take the cobwebs off. Do a good pre-planning for your flight. Do a wonderful pre-flight inspection of your airplane, and then please fly safely.
To listen or watch more episodes of this show, go to FlightSafetyDetectives.com, the Flight Safety Detectives YouTube channel, or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. To contact John and Greg about the show, send them an email at FlightSafetyDetectives@gmail.com. And remember, for aviation insurance needs, contact Avemco Insurance at Avemco.com or give them a call at 888-879-0389. Mention Flight Safety Detectives and receive a 5% discount. Thanks for listening to the Flight Safety Detectives, and remember to always fly safe.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.